You ever get the feeling that everything in America is completely f***ed up?
Now, they're saying I should think stuff like this. They're saying
something is wrong with me.
So cynical.
Practice.
All right, welcome back. It's been a few weeks since we last had an episode of Positive Cynicism, and that is mainly because I've been building the Positive Cynicism studios, and construction took a little longer than I expected because, well, I tried doing it myself, and I realized that I need Bob Vila. I ordered his Time Life books, but they just were not that helpful, so it's taken a little while, but we're back. We've got big plans for 2018, and right now to end 2017, I'm delving into what I expect to be a three-part series on Star Wars fandom. Loyal listeners know that I have done episode on fandom itself before and an episode on Comic-Con, and this one with Star Wars is a little more personal to me because I mean, Star Wars is the reason why I live in Los Angeles and why I actually work for a studio. It was the first movie that I ever saw, and it just captured my imagination, and it has driven my force for being for the last 40 years now. And unfortunately, my Star Wars fandom has dwindled in the last, I would say, 10 to 15 years. So this first part of the Star Wars fandom, and I know, real quick, Greg Mahochko, the host of Nerds United here at Jittery Monkey, probably wants to lay claim to having Star Wars themes on his show, but as the only Jittery Monkey host who actually has a Star Wars tattoo, I am claiming the rights to do Star Wars shows. That said, this first part is all about Star Wars fandom for the generation that grew up with Star Wars. And I say Star Wars when I refer to the first movie because when I saw it, it was not entitled A New Hope. It was just called Star Wars. And I saw it, like I said, it was the first movie I ever saw at a drive-in theater on a double bill with the Duchess and the Dirtwater Fox. If anyone remembers that classic George Segal, Goldie Hawn movie, I would be impressed. Because I couldn't even tell you anything more about that movie other than I saw it with Star Wars. And tonight I am here with my friend Stanton Young, who has an interesting history with Star Wars himself, and as we record this on Sunday, December 10th, I don't know dates, he actually attended the Last Jedi premiere on December 9th at the Shrine Auditorium. I have told him that there will be no Last Jedi spoilers on this episode, and if he gives us any, well, there's really nothing I can do, so I'll just try to make a warning to edit it out beforehand if I... But anyway, I have spoken long enough. Let's bring Stanton on. Stan, yes. First question.
Yes.
How did you get into Star Wars?
Well, originally, I didn't even know really what Star Wars was. Our neighbor, my friend Sean Clark, it was his birthday, and his mom took me, him, and a few of our friends to go see the movie in the theaters. And, you know, I can't remember very much from that day because I was only 7 years old. But what I do remember is I do remember seeing the opening scene of that movie when the Star Destroyer was flying into space, how big it was and the sound. And, you know, what's funny is it resonates with so many fans is whenever you talk to fans about it, they'll tell you the first thing I remember is the big Star Destroyer coming in on the scene. And it's the truth. It's just the one thing that most people can remember from the film. And from that point, with the Stormtroopers and with Darth Vader, my parents started buying me the action figures for Christmas and for my birthday. And it just became this kind of a collector's thing for me where I just fell in love with the movie. I started making my own stories, and I tried to make my own little movies with the characters. And when Empire Strikes Back came out, again, my mom took me to see that movie at a screening. And
let me stop you right there. Yeah. I think this is an interesting part that is different from a lot of other people. Your mom works for the Hollywood Foreign Press.
Is that correct? She works for the HFPA since probably the 60s. Mm-hmm. And since I was a kid, since 5 years old, she would take me to all the movies. I go to every screening since my dad just didn't like them. And so I'd seen the Elephant Man, I saw Jaws, I saw Raiders of the Lost Ark, Superman, E.T., I mean, you name it, I've seen just about every film, Blazing Saddles, the Apple Dumpling Gangs, I've seen all the movies in the theaters at screenings. So for me, it was just, I grew up with film, I grew up with movies, and Star Wars was the one film, you know, that really resonated with me. And then, of course, Raiders of the Lost Ark came into the picture, and that was a big thing for me. And then when Empire Strikes Back came on, that was just, you know, that was really epic for me. I fell in love with the film. And then Return of the Jedi came in, and my brother took me to see that. He actually let me ditch from school that day because it came out on a Wednesday. And I remember he goes, hey, I'll tell you what, just catch the bus, meet me over here in Westwood, and I'll take you to the movies. And so we saw Return of the Jedi in Westwood. I did school that day, and that's really kind of, I've just fell in love with it, you know, and I had all the figures, I read the books, and then I kind of died out, you know. When I got into high school, because 83 was Return of the Jedi, I went to high school in 84, and I got into breakdancing and rapping, and from that point, I kind of lost interest in Star Wars. I just got more into what I was doing for rapping and breakdancing. But I always loved Star Wars. I always had it there that I've loved it. Whenever the movie comes out in the theaters, I'd go and see it with my friends. If it came out on video, I'd watch it on video while I was doing my homework. I'd just listen to it in the background just because I loved it. But it was really dead. There was nothing going on after Return of the Jedi. No figures were being released.
Ewoks Battle for Endor?
Well, if you're considering the cartoons... But I don't really acknowledge those. I did see them, so I am guilty. I am guilty of watching them. But yeah, like there were no figures. There were no movies. Mm-hmm. There were no books.
Yeah.
There was nothing that could really get you into it. And it sort of lost a generation, I think, you know. And we kind of forgot about it, you know. And I'll never forget the first day. It was in 1994. I was in a bookstore in a mall. And I was walking past Borders Books and Music, and on the shelf there was a book by Timothy Zahn called Heir to the Empire, and it had Luke on it. And I looked at this book, and I'm like, what is this? This is a Star Wars novel? So I took it, I looked at the back, and it said, takes place 5 years after Return of the Jedi. So I was like, geeked out, instant mode, went and bought the book, read it within the day. I was done with it by that evening, and completely got re-energized again in this movie. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, oh my gosh, they're making a book. This is great. And then the second one came out, the third one came out, and I must have read the book over and over and over just to keep busy, just to keep the story going. And then soon comic books started coming out. Dark Horse started releasing the first series of the comic books, Tales of the Jedi. Tales of the Jedi was taking place like thousands of years before the Jedi began. And so it showed the dark side and how the Sith became who they are. And it just created this firestorm of fandom that people just started falling in love with the movie again. And so that's how I got back into it.
Okay, yeah, that's an interesting point. Because, yes, after Jedi, there was nothing for 10 years, like you said.
No, at least.
And I think, especially without the internet at the time, so we couldn't keep tabs on what was going on. So I actually sitting here, I forgot all about the Timothy Zahn books, which a friend of mine in college had them, and I'm like, oh my gosh, these are so good. These were the movies that
should have been made.
Yes.
Yeah, and agreed.
And I remember too, like I believe it was 95 when the first action figure wave came out.
Yes.
Again. And that
big
was
buff
like,
guys on steroids.
Yeah. And I remember like going to every Walmart or Kmart trying to track down figures. And so let's jump back to the original trilogy, the original period from 81 to 83, or 77 to 83.
Right.
So you have Star Wars and Empire again. I remember my mom taking me to it and she fell asleep. And then Jedi, I saw twice in the theater. It was like,
right.
I think that and E.T. were the only movies I'd seen multiple times. What is it, do you think? Because you and I are in the same age range.
Right.
And pretty much anyone who's in like the 40 to 50 year old, 55 maybe, range, like Star Wars resonated for a reason. And, you know, it's kind of the godfather or grandfather of the summer blockbuster film.
Right.
which a lot of people I don't think remember or recall, that all the studios passed on making Star Wars.
Yes.
Even though
every single one of them.
Yeah, even though George Lucas had a hit with American Graffiti and had done well with THX 1138, right, Star Wars was just a little too far out there. And then finally 20th Century Fox said, here's $8 million, go make your little space movie.
Yep.
And then it just exploded into this phenomenon. For you, what was it that resonated so well, besides the fact that there were toys and everything?
You know, I can't say specifically what it was. What I can say is that everything in that movie, there wasn't a specific, I mean, I guess you could say the scene between Vader and Obi-Wan when they were fighting. You know, that always resonated with me when he gave his life, you know, and he became one with the Force. I mean, really, I didn't understand the concept of a lot of that stuff in that movie because we hadn't seen Empire and Return of the Jedi. We didn't know about the Jedi lore, you know, and now we're so educated with the history of Star Wars. But at that time, Star Wars for me, it was the action figures. Being able to have the action figures. I remember opening, my brother got me the land speeder for my birthday. And I remember I was so excited about this land speeder. And again, when we'd go to stores and I'd want to buy something, I remember I asked my mom and dad, can I get the Millennium Falcon? My mom and dad said, no way, it's $30. That's way too expensive. You're not getting that. And I was so upset. And I go to myself, you know, I kept saying, you know, one day when I get a job, I'm going to buy my own land speeder and my own Millennium Falcon, and nobody can tell me what to do and how to do it. And I remember saying that to myself. I wanted that Millennium Falcon. I was so pissed my parents didn't get it for me because I wanted it, you know, and it was like the coolest ship in the film. And as soon as I got my job and I started getting into Star Wars, I went back to these conventions and I bought my Millennium Falcon. $120, mint in the box, stickers still on the sticker sheet, you know, and it was a great feeling. And it was something that, there's things about that movie that no other movie has ever been able to do for me. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just, there's memories with that film, and there's excitement with the toys of that film that I could never get with any other movie. You know, I bought the toys from, the movie with the Kraken.
Clash of the Titans.
Clash of the Titans. I had those action figures. I had action figures from Buck Rogers in the 25th Century. You know, and it just, they were just toys. Mm-hmm. But the Star Wars figures and the Millennium Falcon and the X-Wing and the TIE Fighters, man, it's just, I see those today, the originals, and it just brings back like, God, I remember having that. That is so cool.
I know. I'm with you because when the figures came out in 95, I went through probably a 5-6 year phase of recollecting everything that I had lost during my childhood when my parents moved. And then I stopped collecting, but then they started re-releasing the figures with the original boards.
Backings, the boards.
Yeah, and I'm like, oh my gosh, I have to have it because it's that nostalgia feeling.
Board, yeah. Is that feeling that when you first bought it, that was, God, I remember that, you know?
Yeah, I mean, one of my memories, I still recall when I was like 5 years old, watching the original Batman series, and my mom's like, oh, we're going to go.
Burt Ward.
What's that?
The Burt Ward?
The Adam West Batman series. And it was the one where the Joker, I don't know why this has stuck with me, but Joker's in prison playing baseball, and he springboards out of home plate over the fence. I remember it's that episode. And my mom's like, oh, we're going to go uptown. I'm from a small town where the town square is kind of like Hill Valley from Back to the Future. And we had like one little, I don't even know what you type of store to describe it, because it wasn't a convenience store, it wasn't a grocery store. They just had odd and stuff.
Right.
But I remember that day going in there, and that's when I bought my Tusken Raider sand figure.
Oh, yeah.
And again, it's the memory of when I remember when I got him. I remember when I got Bossk.
Yeah.
The Tauntaun action
figure.
You know, it's like these Tauntaun memories of other toys in my childhood, I don't recall, but these memories stick out for a reason. I think it's because of the Star Wars fandom
that
has really encapsulated the memory hole.
Yeah, it's just one of those things where, you know, no other movie has been able to capture that. Mm-hmm. And I don't know what it is. And, you know, I mean, if you think about it, you think of Star Trek, you know, they've come out with probably 5 different series, you know, 2 different movie generations, probably the 50s episodes, right? Mm-hmm. And Star Wars had only 3 movies at the time.
Yeah.
And I mean, 3 movies, resonated with fans for 30 years. Just three movies. Yeah. That was it. And you have all these Star Trek movies and all these Star Trek shows, you know, and people, you don't have fans like Star Wars fans, the way like Star Trek fans. They're not like Star Wars fans. Mm-hmm. It's amazing how three movies can just spawn a generation of fanship for 30, 40 years okay. without, you know, anything else. Sure. There's no new stories at the time.
Yeah, because, until 1999 when Phantom Menace came out. So let's actually, that's a good comparison, Trekkies and Star Wars fans. Mm-hmm. Which, if you have not seen the documentary Trekkies, I highly recommend it. It's one of the best comedies ever made.
I want to see that.
But they now have the Star Wars Celebration.
Right.
Which I believe is every year at this point, is it?
It's like every other year. It's been every year. But for the first one, I went to the first Star Wars Celebration in 1999, a month before The Phantom Menace came out in Denver, Colorado. It was the most unorganized, unprofessional situation ever. Like, they had tents that were full of rain. They had nobody knew where to stand in line. Long story short, there was that one. And then when the second one came out, the second celebration came out. And then when the third movie came out, the third celebration came out. So it was every two or three years they came out. And then I think for the 30th anniversary, they came out with number four, which was at the Staples Center. Okay. And that was in 2005. And then number six went all the way to Europe, so I couldn't go to that. Uh-huh. Seven was in somewhere in another Europe, I think, so I didn't go to that. And then I think the celebration for... what was it? The celebration in Anaheim in 2015 was the next one I went to.
Yeah, before The Force Awakens.
Before The Force Awakens. And that, I got there 2 days ahead of time and slept overnight and was the first person in line, you know, which was pretty epic. And that's kind of like a thing now, you know, at these celebrations, you know, you want to be the first person in line, but nobody's really that crazy to do it, you know, except for a handful of
people. You know, that goes back to the Comic-Con episode, when I had friends on who go to Comic-Con every year, and this year they said, like, to get passes into Hall H, they had to stand in line for, I think it was like 16 hours off and on, like they would switch places.
That's nothing.
And before, they would sleep outside overnight, you know? And my question has been, and I'll ask it to you, for sleeping in line for 2 days to get first in line at a Star Wars convention, why? Because that's the part of
it. You know what? I get it. Why? What normal person would sleep on the cold concrete just to be a first person in line, right? Why not second person or third person? And I'll tell you why. Because in 2015, when I went to the Star Wars Celebration, I was second person in line. I was pissed. This guy was in front of me, him and his wife. And in fact, I'm wearing the outfit that he made for me. So him and his wife were there. And this is about probably 18 to 19 hours before the celebration, I got there and they beat me. I was so upset and so mad. And but anyways, while we're standing there in line, Anthony Daniels came walking up in line, and the first thing that came out of his mouth, he goes, "I want to meet the first person in line. I want to meet who was crazy enough to stand here in line." And he talked to them, and he was like sitting there just taking pictures with them. And I get them back, like, oh, if I was just first in line, I could take pictures with it.
No, wait, you were second person in line, right?
I was second person.
And did he totally just ignore you because
absolutely.
You were the second?
Oh, yeah, he didn't even talk to me. It was talking to the people in the front of the line. And so ever since then, I said to myself, I'm going to be the first person in line, because it's one of those things where it's a pride thing. You just walk out of the saying, yeah, I was first in line. That's right. I'm first in line. I'm crazy. And so when the 2015 convention came up, I said, I'm going to be first in line. And so I ended up getting over there. I ended up sitting out, and I made myself a little sign that said, line starts here, because I wanted to make sure that nobody got in front of me or nobody stood anywhere else. And I was standing out, and I was so, I guess the security guard felt so bad for me that on the second day or the night before the convention was supposed to start, she said, hey, do you want to come inside? We have a room inside of the convention hall that you can sleep in and you can stay in there. And I go, yeah, if you don't mind. I mean, I just want to make sure I keep my space in line. She goes, no problem. Pick your sign. Take it with you. If anybody comes out here, I'll make sure that I bring them inside and they stay behind you. And so people started coming and standing in line behind me. And it was pretty cool. And then all the interviews, the camera people came up, the movie people came up and were interviewing me in the front of the line and asking me all about this and that. And so it was sort of just one of those pride things where, you know, everybody in the back of the line, like the person that's number 300,000 in the back is going, man, how long did that guy have to stay here to stay first in line? So that was it. That's, it's sort of a, it's just a pride thing. And I'll be honest, you know, when you're out there, you talk to people and it's just the camaraderie and the family of people, they could be complete strangers, but you all have a single connection, which is Star Wars. And it doesn't matter where you're from, who you are, what language you speak, you all speak Star Wars.
Unless you speak Klingon.
Unless you speak Klingon, and then, you know, you're going to get made fun of and you're going to get rousted. And some people did actually come with Klingon shirts and, you know, it's pretty funny. They got pretty toasted from other people, a little couple of boos.
But I guess the big question is, when you were first in line, did Anthony Daniels come and say anything to
no,
you?
No, he did not. No celebrities came up and said anything to me. I was so upset. But anyways, it was a self-gratification saying that I did it. I stayed out there for 2 days and I slept in line. And, you know, it was just an experience thing. I talked to so many people, met so many fans that I had never met before, made friends with people in just other countries that I would have never made friends with just from being out there. So it's not just craziness. It's just, it's a part of a family kind of a thing, you know, and just the ability to meet people that you've never met before. And you all have one common goal. You know, you're there for something that you all love to watch. And, you know, I didn't make it into any of the events, like the sittings and the interviews. I can't do that stuff. I just wanted to get in there to the Star Wars store, wanted to buy my merchandise, get out of there, and do my thing. Yeah, and so that's what it was. And so I bought all my merchandise, stood in line, I stood in line for about 5 hours to get to the checkout to buy it. Just 5 hours just to stand in a merchandise line. But you know what? I had my stuff, put it all in my car, came back, and then I walked the convention hall and I enjoyed myself for the rest of the day. But yeah, I was first in line.
That's pretty intense. Yeah, I don't... Again, I can appreciate the fandom in that, but I think for me personally, I would just be like, I can't stay in line. Like, even I go to Disneyland, if a ride is longer than 30 minutes, I'm like, no, I'll come
back.
That's
the amazing thing. I can't stand in a line for the Cars ride for 2 hours. I blow my head off. But if it's Star Wars, two days is nothing. It's like a walk in the park.
So when Disney opens Star Wars Land in a few years, you'll be there first?
I'll already have a reservation at the hotel. I'll have my own personal seat on the Millennium Falcon. Yes, you betcha. And I'll have a drink waiting for me at the Cantina Bar. Oh, yeah. All
right. Okay, so let's go. Okay, so fandom obviously is very... You're still invested in the Star Wars mythology, the Star Wars experience. You know, with the prequels that came out in 90, when everyone was excited, oh my gosh, we're getting new Star Wars films. It's about time. It's interesting to think the time between Jedi and Phantom Menace was 15 years.
Yeah.
And now it's been almost 20 years since Phantom Menace and
the Force Awakens.
And Force Awakens.
Yeah.
But it doesn't seem as long because I think Star Wars has always been there since the prequels.
We've been busy. We've been busy with comic books, with toys, with movies, with cartoons, you know, Rebels, Clone Wars kept us going for seven seasons. I think seven seasons or six seasons. You know, Rebels kept us going for four seasons. So we've been busy between those times. And it's not like, you know, we didn't have anything there. You know, you had the special editions and then the re-special editions and the special editions. Mm-hmm. And then you had the version where Darth Vader screaming. And that was kind of like, you know, that was it.
Yeah, that's the thing. Is we haven't had that down period to have Star Wars out of our collective conscious.
Right.
Okay. But when the prequels came out, I remember, you know, being there opening night. We got our tickets as soon as they went on sale for that midnight screening. Everyone was there. And my experience... Watching Phantom Menace, I was like enjoying the movie, and then when the scene comes at the pod race, when Qui-Gon goes to put Anakin in the pod racer, the power went out.
In the theater.
And we sat there for about 10 minutes, and finally the theater worker came in and was like, power's out on the entire side of town, we're not going to be back up and running, we'll give you a free ticket to come back at any time to see the movie.
Oh, pandemonium.
So, I mean, everyone was cool about it, and they're like, oh, okay. And my friends went back and saw it like 9 o'clock the next morning. I unfortunately had to work. so I couldn't see it until after work. But I remember Phantom Menace, enjoying it in the theater. Attack of the Clones, enjoyed it in the theater. Revenge of the Sith, enjoyed it in the theater. Watching it back later, I'm like, wow, these are not...
Yeah.
They just aren't good. And I think it was that...
Excitement.
The excitement of new Star Wars and wanting it.
Yeah.
So what is your take on the prequels and the fandom around those? Were you the same way? Was it just the excitement of having something new?
Yeah, it was walking in there, and I was so excited just to see a lightsaber pop up on the screen that, honestly, I thought the movie was, like, incredible. I walked out of there just going, God, that was the best Star Wars movie ever. You know, I'm sure most people did. Mm-hmm. You know, and then it was so good, I even watched the film 9 more times in the theaters, okay? I watched The Phantom Menace 10 times, okay? Jar Jar Binks 10 times. So... Jar Jar Binks didn't bother me. You know, I get it. He was created for the kids. Mm-hmm. You know, when we were 7, he's created for them, not for us. You know, and the problem was a lot of the fans wanted a Star Wars movie made just for them. And, you know, it doesn't work like that. You know, Star Wars isn't just for us, the 40-year-olds that had it when we were 7. It means a lot to our kids, and it resonates with, it's a new generation of kids growing up. Mm-hmm. And so George Lucas designed this movie for the new generation of kids that are growing up. Because, you know, as 40-year-olds are 40-year-olds. They're going to be opinionated. They're going to be fans for the rest of their lives. It's their kids that I want to attract. So he made Jar Jar stupid. And yes, after going back and seeing the movie again and again, I'm thinking, oh my gosh, wow, the acting was so bad in this film. But, you know, and again, when he was in the pod racer, you know, that was like just the coolest thing to see on screen. Mm-hmm. I mean, I must have played the song a million times, the Darth Maul song, and watched that scene over and over and over again. You know, but... You know, after watching it, it's like, yeah, you're kind of going, oh, that was horrible. And then Attack of the Clones was okay for me. I enjoyed it. You know, I thought the end sequence was a little too much of Jedis and lightsabers. And then when I saw Revenge of the Sith, I thought to myself, I'm like, why weren't the other two like this? This is what the other two should have been, was this movie. It was just, I mean, granted, the acting was still not the greatest, but it had the most, it was like just most negative you could have in a film. It was like, you know, Mace Windu gets blown out of a window, man. Anakin kills Padme, you know, and it's like all this negative stuff is what you like. And it's weird to say that in a Star Wars movie. I like Empire's like the favorite movie of all the fans because it was just the most negative. Mm-hmm. You know, Luke got his hand cut off, Han Solo on carbonite, Darth Vader won the day, you know, and it was like everybody wants the bad guys to win sometimes. And it was just so off for a Star Wars movie because the first one's about hope. You know, and blowing up the Death Star, and the rebels are free. You know, and then we got the mini Chewbaccas, which were the Ewoks, and that kind of just ruined it. For me, the original trilogy, I think it was necessary to have because it's always something you wanted to do. It's just the middle three movies were the most action and had the most character-driven plots. So, of course, he's going to release those first. No one's going to watch a 5-year-old kid in 1977. I mean, with...
That's one of the complaints of fans too, is why make Anakin so young? The same way when young Boba Fett shows up, you're like, no, I don't want to ruin the mythology of Boba Fett by seeing him as a kid.
Yeah.
And I think 3 should have been started as like 1. And I think the story could have been told better. Now, opinion that I've had since 3 came out, and I think had this happened at the time, people would have just been very upset. But I think when you look back now and take it in context, you never should have seen Darth Vader.
In the third movie?
In the third, at all in those original, in that prequels. Because I think if you don't show Darth Vader, as you go in, if you watch them sequentially, you can, and I was actually watching Empire Strikes Back earlier today, and there's a scene, you know, the scene between the Emperor and Vader where he's like, this, you know, a new disturbance in the Force, I believe it's the offspring of Anakin Skywalker.
Right.
And you're like, now that you know that Vader is Anakin,
right?
Like, it doesn't really resonate as much. He's like, well, why wouldn't you just say it's your son? Like,
yeah,
you know. But I think just not showing Vader. But I think if you hadn't shown Vader, fans would have been outraged.
Oh, like, oh no, been, we would have. Yeah, they would have gone crazy because you want to see how Vader became Vader. You know, I mean, it's just he was playing to the fans, and that's exactly what it was. You know, and when Vader says to the Emperor, you know, he doesn't say anything about his son. Vader knows it's his son. You know, he just doesn't say anything to the Emperor because he's hoping that his son is going to join him to destroy the empire. That's what he says. You and I can rule the galaxy as father and son. You know, so he kept it from the empire. And if you read some of the books in the lore, you know, it explains in there that, you know, he just didn't want to say anything at the time. And he kept a lot from the emperor. Like, that's why the emperor said, you know, your son's here. And he goes, how come I did not feel him in the force? That's strange. You know, and so Vader was, you know, keeping it on the lowdown. Just because he was hoping that he could still team up with the son to kill the emperor, you know, in the very end. Which is, wow, a lot like The Last Jedi.
And moving right along. So, getting back into the fandom.
Yes.
So, you know, we are both, as we say here, in our 40s. You are married with a family
mm-hmm.
who... And we're recording this in your Star Wars man cave, if you mm-hmm. will. You have a Murphy bed case painted like a TIE fighter. You have a Han Solo and Carbonite hanging on the wall. Star Wars posters, photos... What does your family think of your Star Wars obsession? And do they just tolerate it or do they share in with you?
My wife accepts it. She's a good sport about it. She's not a Star Wars fan, but she grew up with her brother, so she knew about it. But honestly, she just tolerates it. You know, she knows how much I love it. Mm-hmm. And because of her love for me, she's totally cool with it. You know, she gets my craziness. Will she stand in line with me for more than 4 hours? No, it won't happen. Not in a million years. But will she understand why I stand in line 2 days beforehand? Absolutely she will. You know, will she let my son come down? And absolutely she will. You know, she wants Wayne to experience that. You know, she says, look, this is your room. You're a Star Wars fan. You want to decorate it like Star Wars? Decorate it like Star Wars. But the rest of the house is mine. You know, and so she'll go to the movies with me. She'll wait in line for 2 hours if we have to go and see it. She goes to the conventions with me, you know, and she walks around the conventions because for her, you know, it's not that she likes it. It's just that she loves me so much that she's willing to accept it and deal with it, you know, and that's how it's just been our whole life. She's just, you know, she's tolerated it. She's been good about it, you know, and a lot of women, man, they're, you know, if you can find a girl that's a Star Wars fan, like you see with these 501st guys, and it's girls that have the tattoos and dress up like the characters, I mean, that's probably like a geek's dream to have a girl like that, you know, that loves it as much as he does. But not all of us are that lucky. You know, a lot of us meet women that just aren't in a Star Wars and that aren't geeks, you know, and you have to live with that, you know. And, you know, my wife just wasn't that kind of a woman, you know, but I fell in love with her anyways, and I married her, and she's just the most incredible sport when it comes to my Star Wars stuff, you know, and same thing for like The Last Jedi. You know, she wanted to go out with her girlfriends on Saturday night. You know, they had planned this for like weeks, you know, and then at the last minute, my mom got these tickets for the world premiere, and Loretta was like, honey, you need to go. You know, this is the world premiere, this is Star Wars. You know, she goes, you never ask for any movies up throughout the year. You never go to any screenings. Of course, I'll let you go to Star Wars. I'll miss out with my girls. You know, that's not a problem. This is a big thing for you. And so she gets it, you know, and I was able to take my son, which was you know, even though I'm a daughter, you know, it's still my, you know, to experience it with him is just, it's just a father and a son thing, you know, and you know, I wish my daughter, he loves Star Wars. Oh yeah. He loves Star Wars, plays Battlefront, you know, knows everything about the movies and the characters. You know, my daughter's more into other stuff. She's not really been into Star Wars, so it's not something that I can, you know, share with her. You know, there are some fathers and daughters that have great relationships with Star Wars, you know, and the daughters just continue on their lives. But for me and William, it's just, it's like our thing, you know. We play Battlefront together. We go to the Star Wars movies together, you know. And yeah, we go as a family, but if I could take my son to a convention with me, and that's the best thing in the world, you know. One thing I can't stand is being at a Star Wars convention and not having my family there. It is the worst feeling in the world. Even though it's really for me, you know, it's just to not be able to have them there to share that with them or to experience with them, it sucks, you know. And so any chance I can get them to come with me, you know, we do it as a family. Yeah.
I think that's a good emphasis to put on. Like, your fandom doesn't separate you from your family. You don't put that above family. So that is a good... Talking about the premieres, because
yes.
Last Jedi was not the only premiere that you've attended.
No.
Correctly. And I guess the premiere, and tying into your fandom now, what keeps the fandom alive for you? I mean, we've discussed, you know, what it was as a kid and then the rebirth of the Star Wars generation. What now, with there being no downtime with Star Wars over the last 20 years, why does it still resonate?
Why does it still resonate with me? Well, God, I think it's just the idea of new stories. And I'll be honest, when Force Awakens came out, right, there wasn't as much excitement as there was for The Phantom Menace, because The Phantom Menace had been 20 years since we had a Star Wars movie.
Well, and I think the backlash against the prequels kind of tapered expectations for the new series, too.
Yeah, I mean, it did, you know, and people were a little, you know, weary about anything coming out with it, but there was enough coming out at the time that people were like, okay, we'll deal with it. Mm-hmm. You know, and I think the only thing that ruined the... I mean, it was the special edition and all the stuff that George Lucas was doing with the changes. I think that really had a lot to do with why people just did not like The Phantom Menace. You know, it was... It just... Hayden Christensen also wasn't the greatest actor. It didn't really help, you know. And Qui-Gon Jinn isn't sellable as a 7-foot Jedi, you know. But what keeps it alive for me to this day is the idea of... When The Force Awakens came out, like I said... It wasn't going into a prequel like new actors, new storyline, new things. This is a continuation. And ever since Return of the Jedi came out, and you have all these comic books of Luke going to the dark side, and, you know, Han Solo and Leia having three kids, and Chewbacca dying in the comic book, you know, when the movie comes out, you're like, God, what does Han Solo look like as an old man? I mean, it's exciting because this is a continuation of like the story that you've loved for years. You're like, what's going to happen with Luke? And when he sees Leia again, it's like, it was just an excitement of, you know, what are these characters going to look like when they're older? When I saw Han with the gray hair coming in the Millennium Falcon for the first time and saying, Chewie, we're home. It was, I can't explain just the geekasm that I had when I saw that, because it was like, oh my God, this is Han Solo. I mean, he's old. We're going to get to see him with Chewbacca and Leia and Luke. And it's like, oh my God, this is real Star Wars. This isn't the Phantom Menace, like little Anakin creating a story. This is like, we're going to find out what happened after Return of the Jedi. You know, and so when the movie came out, it was a lot like A New Hope, you know, and I get it. They wanted to keep a consistency and a familiarism with the original film, and I appreciated that. For me, I enjoyed the movie just as much as I did the first one, because it was brand new. And you know, I didn't go to the first world premiere of The Force Awakens. We didn't get to go. My mom didn't get to go, and I was really upset. And then Rogue One came out, and they gave my mom the tickets to the Rogue One premiere, and so I went with her. And so that was the first world premiere of a Star Wars movie I'd ever been to in my life. And it was so exciting because, you know, I got to meet all the actors, and then I got to meet all these other actors that weren't even in the movies but have their own TV shows that you get to meet as well. And, you know, I remember I came home that night and William was all upset. He goes, Dad, that sucks, man. I never get to go to a world premiere. You get to go to all these cool things. And just once I'd like you to take me to the world premiere. And I told him, I go, well, William, I can't, because Nana only gets 2 tickets. You know, and she has to be there with the guest. They're non-transferable. So this year, we didn't think we were going to get the premiere. My mom, they sent an email to my mom, literally. Within 10 minutes, the tickets were full up. They were gone. And so my mom goes, sorry, honey, you know, the tickets are all filled up. And so I was ticked off. And so I said, is there any way to contact Frankie at the studio? Or, because we know the guy that runs the Disney studio. He's an old friend of mine. But I said, is there any way that they might have another screening that I can go to? And sure enough, she goes, yeah, they're going to have a screening on Monday at 1 o'clock, 4 o'clock, 7 o'clock, you know. And he said, you can bring a guest, just pick whatever you want. So I decided to go to that one. I said, any screening, anytime. And then 2 days last week, before 2 days after that happened, they called my mom. They said, hey, we got you 2 tickets to the premiere. There was an opening. And so my mom said, I don't want to drive all the way to Hollywood, and I don't want to drive to downtown LA. And I'm like, Mom, I only ask you once a year to do this. So she didn't want to go. And I said, okay, well, you know what? I'll just go because I'm on the list, but I'm going to take William with me this year because he's never been there. And so she goes, I don't think you're going to be able to get in because I'm not there. And I go, I'll just try it. If they turn me away, they turn me away, Mom. At least we'll get to see it on Monday. But I'm going. We're going to the premiere, and I'm going to get in because I don't think they're going to turn away a kid. And so, you know, I went there, waited in line, And the excitement that's there isn't just my excitement, but to see all the people that are there, how big this thing is, how to be on that red carpet, you feel like, dude, I'm privileged, man. I got to do something that nobody else gets to do. I'm seeing the movie a week before everybody else. And I think it's that kind of excitement of being the first to see something that nobody else can see that adds to the excitement of the film and watching it. And, you know, when we sat in that movie, the lights went down and the opening scene opened up, you know, and we're watching it. I looked at William and I just go, dude, this is it. We're here. We're watching it. It's like there's no more wondering what's going to happen. There's no wondering if Rey turns to the dark side or if Kylo Ren turns good or who's, you know, Snoke or what happens with Leia and Chewbacca. There's no more wondering. We're going to find it right now, dude. In 2 hours, we're going to see everything. And it turned out to, it just blew us away. I mean, it's, you know, without getting into anything, it's, you know, I got to say it had a lot of elements of Empire, but the film was probably the best of the series. Literally, I can easily say that my personal self. And just because of the stuff that went on in the film is just stuff that's geekasm. It's just geeks are going to go crazy over with the stuff that they're going to see. It's just going to, it's going to bring back a wave of emotion. And it's funny, man. There's a lot of funny stuff in the film, but
yeah, I see, know, that part, well,
I know that bothers you.
That bothers me. Cause I don't, which we'll get into in the next episode of Positive Cynicism. All right. Well, Stan, thank you for being here.
Yeah.
We're running short on time, so we got to wrap this up, but I just have one last question or story that I want you to share. Because I know, in addition to the premieres, you have also attended the Golden Globe ceremonies.
Yes.
And I know a few years ago, you actually ran into George Lucas.
Yes.
Do you have anything memorable from that experience that you would like to share, that story?
I could just say, if it wasn't for my wife, I would have never met George Lucas that day. I had met him, I had met Mark Hamill when I was 7. That was a monumental moment for me. I had met George Lucas at a re-release of the Indiana Jones Chronicles. And I got him to autograph like my comic books and a few action figures. Got pretty much kicked out of the press conference that day. And my mom really was ticked off at me for a while. But then I had an opportunity to meet him again. He was at the Golden Globe Awards that year. And I had seen his gray hair. He was sitting next to James Cameron. And there was white hair. And I told Loretta, I'm like, okay, there's George Lucas. I just saw him on screen. And she's like, oh, no. Tell me that's not true. He's right there. Honey, we got to meet him. That's it. That's my mission this whole night is I'm going to find George Lucas. I'm going to meet him. And so we followed him. He must have left. We didn't know where he went. So we hopped from party to party. Finally, we ended up at the HBO party. We're sitting there in the chair. My wife goes, I'm going to go up and get something to eat. You want a drink? I'm like, yeah, just get me a drink. She comes back. She goes, okay, honey, try not to freak out. But George Lucas is coming in right now. They're talking to him. He's over there. I'm like, what? And I go, Mom, let's go. Bring your foreign press card. We are working this. So we run around the red carpet. We stand at the edge. And I'm just waiting for him to come walking over to me. And I tell my mom, I'm like, okay, Mom, just you go over, grab him, and just see if I can get a picture with him. And, you know, we're standing there, and the security guard came by and said, I'm sorry, you guys can't stand here. You're going to have to move. And I go, no. My mom's a member of the Foreign Press Association. We're standing right here. I want to take a picture with this guy. Sorry, you're nobody. But my mom's a foreign press. I was throwing the gauntlet down, man. I didn't care. And so George Lucas walked up, you know, and he was with the son. And my mom said, look, he's a big fan of yours, my son. Do you mind taking a picture with him? And he said, sure. So I got in there. I put his arm around me and I'm like, he's touching me. And
in Hollywood today is not a good thing.
Which is not a good thing, no. But I would have been okay if George Lucas was George Lucas is fine. I'm good with that. You know, and I said to him, I said, I just want to thank you for bringing so many good memories to me and my son. You know, it's because of you that, you know, I have memories with him that, you know, resonate with me for the rest of my life. And he said, oh, it's my pleasure. He said, absolutely. He said, thank you. And that was it. And then he walked out and he was gone out of the party, not to be seen again. You know, and so, you know, it was one of those things. And I got the picture with him and I have it to this day. And I can say I met George Lucas. You know, it's not something a lot of people can say. He doesn't do very many interviews. But it was definitely a geekasm moment for me meeting him. You know, and that was, you know, that was it. And I'm like, I'm happy. I don't care who I meet in this party tonight. I met George Lucas. So I'm good to go. You know, just give me my food and that's it.
And so while we end on a high note for you, we end on a low note for me because I have not met George Lucas. Yes. He's one of the holy grails. He and Steven Spielberg would be the two people that, you know, I would love to meet someday. But whatever. Again, I think this has been a good conversation on fandom. If you're listening to this, thank you for listening. Hit me up on Twitter at Chad Smart. Let me know your Star Wars fandom or fandom in general. Why you have it, what drives it in you. And look for two more episodes on Star Wars. One, next week's episode will be kind of a pre-Last Jedi, looking at what Disney is doing, what the excitement of when Disney announced the new Star Wars trilogy. Then the episode after that will be a post-Jedi, Last Jedi kind of review, and looking forward to all the things that Disney has in plan with the Star Wars universe. So once again, thank you for listening. As always, question everything, do something positive,
and may the Force be with you.
This is a production of the Jittery Monkey Podcast Network. For more jittery shenanigans, go to jitterymonkey.com.